It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. Where there's smoke, there's often fire, and the FBI says there's a lot of fire swirling around Donald Trump right now. Legal analyst Lori Levinson gets us started.
What we're really learning about is why the government went in with the search warrant. And they went in because they believed that Trump and his team were not being open.
The Justice Department accusing the former president of concealing top secret information in an effort to impede a federal investigation. Criminal law professor Walt Lippmann.
Trump tried every trick in the book to keep these documents from going back to where they belong.
Some of the classified documents seized during the raid this month on Trump's home were found in a desk in the former president's office. Legal scholar Matthew Miller.
So the idea that he didn't know he was holding on to classified information and they were sitting in his desk, in his office, it's very hard to make the argument.
But Greg Jarrett with Fox News takes these cover-up accusations with a grain of salt.
This is the same FBI, time and again, that has used their unlimited resources and immense power to target people for political reasons.
Former Congressman Jason Chaffetz thinks there's a double standard at the FBI and points to the Hillary Clinton email scandal as evidence of that.
When I was the chairman of the Oversight Committee and I issued subpoenas, we were trying to get after classified and highly sensitive documents. They destroyed them. They used bleach bit. And did the FBI do anything to help there? No, the Department of Justice issued, guess what? Immunity agreements. So it's this double standard in administration of justice that I think is the heart of the problem that so many Americans have with this.
Trump's legal team wants a separate set of eyeballs to review this case. He's charged with violating the Presidential Records Act by removing classified data from the White House when he left office last winter. The federal government today authorized the first update to COVID vaccine shots. These are booster shots designed to take aim at the most common forms of COVID.
There has not been significant human studies done prior to their approval by the FDA. It was felt that given the dire need of these vaccines for the general public, that getting them out there as soon as possible was little risk compared to the potential reward of blocking serious illness.
Infectious disease expert Dr. David Agus says the first shots in arms could happen within days. Water woes continue in Jackson, Mississippi. Officials say it could take weeks to get the water flowing again in the state capital.
Right now, we're operating in crisis mode.
180,000 residents unable to use the tap or the toilet. Governor Tate Reeves says the wait for water could be lengthy.
This is not a situation that's going to be solved immediately, and it's not going to be solved overnight.
He's called in the National Guard to help distribute bottled water. Those who are fortunate enough to still have the water coming out of the tap must boil it first before using it.
We've had to boil water to cook, to wash dishes, you know, pretty much to brush our teeth. So it's been hectic.
The water emergency forcing schools to close in Jackson. Record rain decimated the city's main water treatment plant. President Biden continues his barnstorming tour of battleground Pennsylvania. He'll deliver a primetime address to the nation tomorrow night in Philadelphia. Yesterday in Wilkes-Barre, he called out Republicans on the crime-fighting front.
Let me say this to my MAGA Republican friends in Congress. Don't tell me you support law enforcement if you won't condemn what happened on the 6th.
But South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says the White House has no foot to stand on when it comes to condemning crime.
You know, one way to encourage political violence is to bail out people who attack the cops. The Vice President of the United States staff raised money to bail people out of jail who rioted in New York, who attacked the cops, and they went right back to crime.
The president is in Pennsylvania pushing a $13 billion plan to hire another 100,000 cops over the next 5 years. Help wanted. The Labor Department says there were 11.2 million job openings in July, about a million more than in June.
91% of small businesses last month said they couldn't find anybody. The labor market has shrunk so much, people are staying on the sidelines. We were paying them to do that. And the result is now now businesses are saying, I can't find workers. People are paying for that. That menu price goes up. You're going to pay for the fact that so many workers are staying on the sidelines.
Ryan Brenberg is an economics professor at King's College in New York City. Meantime, California lawmakers have just approved a measure requiring all employers post salaries for open jobs, and larger firms will have to report pay scales by gender, race, and ethnicity. That information will be made public in California. Europe's largest nuclear plant is in Ukraine, and right now it's in a wartime line of fire. Today, UN inspectors arrived there to try and contain the catastrophe. Here's reporter Deborah Pata.
The team will spend a few days at the site in an attempt to stabilize the situation. The nuclear inspectors met with Ukrainian government officials yesterday, including Energy Minister Herman Khalushenko, who told CBS News they made it clear the Russian occupation of the plant has to end.
The station should be back to Ukrainian control.
Russia's occupied that nuclear site since the early days of the war. Well, decades ago, both Russia and Ukraine were part of the Soviet Union on the same team in solidarity against the U.S. in what was commonly known as the Cold War.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The last Soviet ruler, Mikhail Gorbachev, who met many times with President Reagan, died yesterday at 91. Russian ruler Vladimir Putin says Gorbachev had a deep impact on the course of history. President Biden called him a rare leader. Former CBS News Moscow bureau chief Beth Noble wrote her dissertation on Gorbachev.
I think he'll be looked back upon as someone who ended up doing great things for the world by bringing down the USSR, by ending the Cold War, and by bringing democracy to millions of people in the former Soviet bloc.
Former CIA official Dan Hoffman was stationed in Moscow for 5 years.
Mikhail Gorbachev will be remembered for having exposed the inherent failures of that Soviet command economy and their corrupt political process, but also for having exposed the fact that they could never reform it from within. And when faced with President Reagan's stalwart opposition to communism, the Soviet Union just couldn't withstand that, and it collapsed.
Hoffman says Gorbachev deserves a lot of credit for winding down the evil empire without a catastrophic nuclear war through policies like glasnost and perestroika. Gorbachev led a slow creep from communism to capitalism in the old Soviet Union. Life expectancy in these United States dropped for a second straight year in 2021, falling by nearly a year from 2020. Here's reporter Steve Harrigan.
This is a shocking drop over the two-year period. If you go back in U.S. history, you have to go 100 years to see such a drop in life expectancy. Just 3 years ago, the average American lived to age 79. Right now, that number is down to 76.
Health officials say COVID's the main culprit for a shorter life expectancy, but it's not the only one. America's exploding opioid epidemic also largely to blame. Fentanyl right now is the number one killer of middle-aged Americans. Still to come on the Noon Report, a midweek edition, New York's new gun law, Dr. Oz wants to debate. And what happened at Roberts Wesleyan?
Good afternoon. Cooler, drier air sweeping into the region today, setting us up for some comfortable conditions over the next couple days. But a lake effect shower or a thunderstorm also in the mix. Forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, we will see you then, Kevin Williams. Thank you. News where you live next. New York's sweeping new gun law takes effect tomorrow, September 1st. It creates gun-free zones at parks, churches, on the subways, and in the theaters. This New Yorker likes the law.
I don't think that any civilian should be carrying a gun for any reason whatsoever.
Also, businesses that do allow concealed carry must display that for all to see. These New Yorkers fear with crime on the rise, this law could backfire.
Some people might feel safe with the guns.
I think there are cases where there is a good guy with a gun.
The gun control measure passed the state legislature after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling in June that expanded gun rights. This quickly adopted law has led to confusion and court challenges from gun owners who say it improperly limits their constitutional rights. Pennsylvania police may have to give back a cache of weapons that were seized from the parents of the man who led them on the largest manhunt in Pennsylvania history 8 years ago. Eric Freen hid out in the Pocono Mountains for nearly 50 days after shooting to death a state trooper and permanently disabling another. He was eventually captured in an abandoned airport hangar and is currently on death row. After the trial, authorities confiscated 25 rifles, 10 pistols, and two shotguns from the parents' home. A court said this week because those weapons were never used in the commission of a crime, Pennsylvania may have to return those weapons to the parents of Eric Freen. New York Congresswoman Nicole Maliotakis says President Biden's created a humanitarian catastrophe at the southern border.
This president has undone the policies of President Trump, and now we're seeing a 300% increase of crossings at our southern border.
She also blames New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
You have our governor providing free health care to illegal immigrants, and then Kathy Hochul tells New Yorkers, she tells her taxpaying citizens, if you don't like it, move to Florida.
7,000 to 8,000 illegal immigrants a day are crossing the southern border. FEMA's footing the bill to bus many of them to New York City, and the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, is housing them in $700 a night hotels. Pennsylvania Republican U.S. Senate candidate Dr. Mehmet Oz says he is frustrated that his Democratic opponent, John Fetterman, is refusing to a debate.
I offered John Fetterman numerous opportunities to explain to me how I can make it easier for him to debate, but at this point, since he's given numerous reasons for not showing up, including the fact that he didn't have time on his schedule, I'm of the opinion that he's hiding his radical views because he is the furthest far-left radical candidate in any competitive Senate race this cycle, and he doesn't want those views to be exposed.
Fetterman suffered a stroke back in the spring and only recently returned to the campaign trail. Dr. Oz says his views on immigration, crime, and drugs should frighten every Pennsylvanian.
He wants open borders, sanctuary cities, wants to legalize all drugs, wants heroin injection sites. I'll tell you, as a physician, there is no way for us to keep up with the massive influx of lethal fentanyl if John Fetterman gets his way.
The latest polls show Fetterman leading Oz by less than 5 points with 2 months to go before the vote. A former Roberts Wesleyan College student is suing the Rochester, New York school over the way her rape investigation was handled.
A lot of folks that go to her church go to the school. She really felt like it was going to be a safe place to go and was blindsided by the lack of care she received when she made this report.
The attorney for that woman tells WROC that her client was sexually assaulted last fall on the campus of Roberts Wesleyan.
She was diagnosed with PTSD and she's continuing to suffer the effects of that.
Roberts Wesleyan College has released a statement saying it takes these charges seriously and that they are committed to protecting the safety and well-being of all on campus. PennDOT urging motorists to play it safe on the roads this upcoming Labor Day weekend.
There were 945 crashes resulting in 12 fatalities statewide over the holiday weekend last year, with over half of the crashes related to drugs and alcohol. A Tuesday news release from the organizations highlighted the data and encourages motorists to ensure their safety and the safety of others on our roadways by being responsible and safe when driving, not just this weekend, but all the time. Pennsylvania State Police will hold increased enforcement details, especially in the period Friday through Monday. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brian. Those familiar yellow school buses are rolling down the road again, and AAA is urging drivers to play it safe. Every day in New York, 50,000 motorists will pass a school bus illegally. Police want us to remind you when the school bus flashes red, you need to stop. Penalties for illegally passing a stopped school bus can range from a $1,000 fine to 5 points on your license. And when the kiddos do head back to school next week, every one of them in Erie County, New York, will be going to a classroom with an air purifier. Dr. Ruby Harris at Grand Island Central.
Of course, we hope COVID numbers go down, but the air purifiers have really allowed us to open schools in a safe and comfortable environment for teachers, for staff, for students, and for parents.
The air purifiers are designed to last 5 years. 12,500 of them are going into every Erie County classroom. They're paid for by money from the American Rescue Plan.
We're hoping now that we have these super air filtration systems, I'm optimistic that we're going to see less transmission of respiratory viruses in the classroom.
Erie County Health Commissioner Dr. Gail Bernstein. More than 100 schools in Philadelphia are closing early today because of the heat. Those schools lack air conditioning to cool teachers, staff, and students off. And they are closing 3 hours early today. 60% of all the schools in Philadelphia don't have air conditioning. New York Governor Kathy Hochul is providing more money for child care providers. It's all in an effort to give parents more options when it comes to their child care needs.
The state is providing $343 million federal dollars from a child care provider stabilization grant that'll go to providers to help with the high demand for child care. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand helped secure the federal grant.
This is direct money to the providers so they can stay in business, so they can offer more slots, offer more jobs to more teachers.
The governor is also launching a multimedia marketing campaign over the next few months to educate folks on child care assistance. She says only 12% of families eligible for child care assistance are taking advantage of it. Scott Pringle, New York.
16 past the hour, midday sports next.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob Aaron Judge is on another plane when it comes to hitting home runs. He's still on pace to set an American League record for the most hit in a season. He hit number 51 last night in the Yankees 7-4 win over Anaheim. Andrew Benintendi and Anthony Rizzo also went deep for the Bronx Bombers. The Blue Jays kept pace with the Yanks, knocking off the Cubs 5-3. Two other interleague contests saw Oakland beat Washington 10-6 and Tampa Bay won over Miami 7-2. Results from the rest of the American League had Cleveland, Seattle, Minnesota, Houston, and Kansas City all win their games. Well, what many consider to be a preview of the National League pennant series began with a series in New York last night as the teams with the two best records in baseball squared off. Both Starling Marte and Mark Canna hit home runs for the New York Mets, but Gavin Lux drove in three for the Dodgers, and L.A. edged New York 4-3. Michael Chavis did some yard work of his own as the Pirates prevented Milwaukee from making up any ground on St. Louis. 4-2 your final. Mitch Keller struck out 10 over six innings to get the win. Cardinals lost to Cincinnati 5-1. Arizona put a hurt on the Phillies last night 12-3. The Padres edged the Giants 4-3. Colorado downed Atlanta 3-2. So the Braves remain three back of the Mets. And in hockey news, Penguins head coach Mike Sullivan will be sticking around for quite a bit longer as he and Pittsburgh agreed to a new contract that runs through the 2026-27 season. That is a look at sports.
All right, thank you kindly, Randy Mann. And still to come on the Noon Report, the last ruler of the Soviet Empire, water woes in Jackson, and the death of a princess.
Our northern neighbors continue to be proof just how slippery the slope is when it comes to doctor-assisted death. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In 2016, Canada legalized euthanasia through the euphemistically titled Medical Aid in Dying Act, or MAID. Since passing, the number of Canadians who either enthusiastically or cautiously support this practice has risen slightly, from 75% to 80%. The response, however, from communities representing those with disabilities has remained consistently opposed. Their fears that Canada's end-of-life policies would prove to be only the cliff edge of a moral abyss have proven to be largely accurate. As Maria Chang of the Associated Press reported, Canada now has, quote, arguably the most permissive euthanasia rules in the world. Just last year, over 10,000 lives were legally taken, an increase of a third from just the year before. Patients can request aid in dying without informing family members and for any reason, including, beginning in 2023, mental health issues, not just physical suffering. And next year in Canada, euthanasia will likely be extended to so-called mature minors. At a time when so many efforts are being made towards suicide prevention among teenagers, they'll be taught there that death is now an acceptable way out of mental anguish. It's absolutely horrific.
The deadly cocktail of adverse incentives, little accountability, and ineffective safeguards have led to a context in which, as AP's Cheng wrote, quote, some disabled Canadians have decided to be killed in the face of mounting bills. Other disabled people say the easy availability of euthanasia has led to unsettling and sometimes frightening conversations. For example, one Canadian Armed Forces veteran was outraged after a healthcare worker raised the possibility of assisted death as a treatment option for his PTSD. And Alan Nichols was a 61-year-old man who was hospitalized in 2019 over fears that he might be suicidal. Within a month, described Chang, Nichols submitted a request to be euthanized and he was killed, despite concerns raised by his family and a nurse practitioner. And the only physical health condition that was listed on Nichols' form of consent was hearing loss. According to his brother Gary, Alan was basically put to death. Now, stories like these are, of course, shocking, but we can't say that we were not warned by nearly every disability group in Canada, by observers from the UN, and by even the American Medical Association. When it comes to euthanasia and doctor-assisted death, abuses and loopholes are not anomalies. They are inevitabilities of a system which operates from a cheapened view of human value and a redefined understanding of healthcare. Against such cultural headwinds, mere consent is not enough. In fact, whenever and wherever it has been legalized, the so-called right to die soon becomes a perceived duty to die. Patients consistently report making decisions about not wanting to be a burden on friends and family, or because they're convinced, as one law and disability professor put it, that a life with disability is automatically less worth living and that in some cases death is preferable. Euthanasia is at odds with any civilized vision of human value. As Alan Nichols' sister-in-law said, somebody needs to take responsibility so that it never happens to another family. I'm terrified of my husband or another relative being put in the hospital and somehow getting these euthanasia forms in their hand. Well, let's pray that the rest of the world learns from Canada's terrible experiment. And in nation after nation, the lid of this Pandora's box will be slammed shut. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
22 past the hour, Kevin Williams next.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast. Here's our call for this afternoon. A breezy afternoon, comfortable, less humidity. A mix of sun and clouds with an isolated shower and thunderstorm for some. High temps, 70s and low 80s, dropping tonight into the 50s. Skies will be starlit for many, but a few lake effect showers and rumbles are likely east and southeast of Lake Erie and Ontario, lingering into tomorrow morning in central New York. Otherwise, for tomorrow, ample sunshine and crisp. High temperatures, upper 60s, the mid-70s. Sunny, warmer on Friday. High temps then near 80.
All right, Kevin Williams, thank you. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Here's what's happening this Wednesday afternoon, the last day of August. There's new information about what the FBI found when it raided Donald Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago. Investigators say attempts were made to conceal materials related to the probe into the former president.
The explosive legal document revealed for the first time ever photo evidence of the highly classified documents it seized from Trump's Florida home. The filing was in response to the Trump legal team's request for an independent attorney or special master to be appointed to review the evidence.
Correspondent Robert Costa Dambongino with Fox News says the feds have proven they cannot be trusted with this politically charged case.
Why would you trust the FBI when it comes to Trump? Can you give me a reason? Then you say, well, it's just a few bad apples. Is it? It's not one bad apple. It's a rotten orchard.
Earlier this week, a 25-year veteran of the FBI resigned after it was shown he tried to cover up evidence related to the Hunter Biden laptop scandal. World leaders are praising the late Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev, the last ruler of the Soviet Union, credited with bringing down the Iron Curtain and helping to end the Cold War, died yesterday at 91. Now to Jackson, Mississippi, where health concerns are on the rise due to a lack of safe drinking water.
City and state leaders are racing to get bottled water to the city's 180,000 residents who are without usable water. Flooding from heavy rain last week caused problems with the city's trouble-prone water treatment plants.
Praying that this be over in a couple days, so we'll have to keep going back and forth buying water and they clean up the water system.
Owners of businesses that had to close are furious, demanding someone in a leadership position be held accountable. Jim Crisula, Jackson, Mississippi.
24 past the hour. This is the Noon Report.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the noon report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And today we're looking at men and church attendance numbers. And Chris, statistic that really stands out is women outnumber men in churches 61-39%. So let's get right to the heart of this matter by asking why.
Well, I think it's important to look at what's happening in the church in the United States and understand some of the trends over the past three decades or so. We've seen a decline in church attendance overall, and along with that decline, there's a more significant decline in the number of males attending, as you pointed out, Brandon. Mainline denominations have been suffering attendance declines the most, even with a corresponding shift away from biblical teachings and truth, which, you know, you'd think would encourage more people to attend, but especially if those trends are actually making it more attractive to people based on cultural currents to want to attend.
But we're not seeing that.
No, we're not. But over the same period of time, we've seen growth in other types of churches, your non-denominational and independent congregations, or in denominations that offer a greater level of autonomy at the local level.
When we're talking about men specifically, what's keeping them from attending or being more involved, even if they are attending?
There are a few factors that I believe are playing the largest role in influencing men. For one thing, the watering down of Scripture to remain relevant to the shifting and changing cultural attitudes is a big part of it. We've seen such an assault on the biblical truths, especially in the past 15 years, that there are differences between men and women. Of course, these differences have been used abusively in the past to prevent women from taking on additional roles within the church or otherwise to elevate men from a value standpoint above women. We know that God created us as men and as women, both in His image. He gave us certain qualities and responsibilities that are different from each other. But again, this isn't to say that either role is more valuable or superior to the other. And sadly, our past cultural currents turned it into that. So men have been stigmatized as being problematic. We see that in so many ways in society. So I think that men now are a bit gun-shy when it comes to trying to exert what they see as their God-given responsibilities. They don't want to be seen as being domineering, even when they're just trying to fulfill their God-given responsibilities. So another factor is that churches are having a hard time staying firm themselves in biblical teachings, and church leaders and pastors aren't necessarily meeting the needs of men. So the churches that are doing well, that are growing, where men are attending, have accepted the need of men, accepting the needs as leaders, and are equipping them and allowing men to be men and not have to conform to this gender-blurring, gender-neutral definition that society wants. You know, society wants these safe, emasculated, men-type figures that are not being fully developed as God wants them to be. So men that are plugged into a church that allows them to be men, to take on the role that God wants them to be, you know, equipping them to be biblically and godly husbands and fathers and leaders of their community, have a much higher percentage of men that not only attend, but also take an active role in the functioning of a congregation. So these churches also plan events specifically for men that goes beyond a safe little men's breakfast or Bible study. They are doing activities to help their communities, such as reaching out and using their skills to help those in need. So again, they are doing men's retreats and equipping and practically training up men, boots on the ground type trainings to help men and boys that are becoming men to develop into the roles that God actually wants them to assume.
What advice do you have for church leaders and pastors that may want to address deficiencies they may see in their own congregations?
I think it's important for church leaders to take an honest assessment of their own outreach efforts directed towards men and see if they've become too culturally relevant instead of remaining firm to biblical teachings. Then if they have and they see that they've done this, then they need to decide to change that. Will there be pushback and resistance? Of course. There's going to be. That's what happens. Leave that to God. You just be faithful to God's word. Allow Him to guide and navigate these challenges. Church leaders and pastors can and also should reach out to others as well. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't let pride get in the way of asking your denomination leaders and your districts or whatever for help, or even asking someone from outside your denomination. I know that might go against protocol and ruffle some feathers. Well, That's okay. Do it. Feathers at times need to be ruffled. The reason why this is happening is because, again, we've become too afraid of offending. Well, Christ wasn't worried about offending the Pharisees nor the other community leaders of the time, but church leaders need to be active in addressing the practicality of their ministries to all people in their churches. And today we're talking especially about men. So there are resources and there are books that can be used to guide this process. But with all secondary literature, make sure you hold it up to the standard of truth, and that is the Bible.
You've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the noon report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
All right, great discussion today, guys. Thank you very much. You can download all our Real Answers podcasts at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The cold front that swept through the area last night, preceded by showers and thunderstorms, has opened the window to a refreshing air mass that'll be in place now for the next couple days and nights. This cooler air, though, will travel the distance of Lake Erie and Ontario and result in lake effect. A couple lake effect showers and thunderstorms are in the mix as well for parts of the area. Here's our call for this afternoon. A breezy afternoon, comfortable, less humidity. A mix of sun and clouds with an isolated shower and thunderstorm for some. High temps, 70s and low 80s, dropping tonight into the 50s. Skies will be starlit for many, but a few lake effect showers and rumbles are likely east and southeast of Lake Erie and Ontario, lingering into tomorrow morning in central New York. Otherwise, for tomorrow, ample sunshine and crisp. High temperatures, upper 60s to the mid-70s. Sunny, warmer on Friday. High temps then near 80.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin. Finally at noon, where were you when it happened? 25 years ago today came the news that shook the world. The death of Princess Diana.
We heard a huge explosion.
This American tourist was there.
It was a screech and then it sounded like an explosion.
Princess Diana was in the back.
This French ambulance man tried to save her. Back home in Britain, best friend Rosa Monckton heard there'd been an accident.
And I was just sitting in a heap, you know, waiting to hear the latest bit of news.
Buckingham Palace has announced the death of Diana, Princess of Wales.
A shocked and traumatized nation woke up to word that the people's princess was dead. Elton John singing at Diana's funeral. William and Harry have since spoken of the scars left by their mother's death, but also of a legacy of service to the poorest and the forgotten. Each, in his own way, has tried to continue. Vicky Barker, London.
And that is the world we live in. Wednesday, the 31st of August. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.